is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And I am sheltering at home, so I'm not at the office. We're still in that period of time where we have to do that. But one of the benefits is I get to talk to Maggie Murphy, a Calaveras Master Gardener, who started a brand new Facebook group on the Calaveras Master Gardener Facebook page. Hello, Maggie. Good morning.
Good morning, Debbie. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And this is very exciting. And I'm wondering if maybe first you can explain to everybody, what is a Facebook group and why do a Facebook group and why do one on just selecting victory gardens?
Okay, well, there's three things in there. So for victory gardens, I'll start there. Victory gardens, and I'll give you a little history after we talk about the Facebook group. How about that? But victory gardens started in World War I. They were picked up in World War II. And it's something that's making a comeback now as people stay close to home and they go outside and they're productive. And a lot of other universities have chosen to do these Victory Garden 2020 launches. And we thought, wow, that's a pretty cool idea. Why don't we do that here? So at this point, we've started a Facebook group. Now, a Facebook group is that people who have a Facebook ID, that's kind of step one, you have to be on Facebook, can join a group. And Facebook has all kinds of groups. There are groups for crocheting and sewing and gardening, every topic you can think of. And they have subsets of groups. So people who have Husqvarna Viking sewing machines have one group, and people who have Bernina sewing machines have their own group, and people can ask questions about how to use their machines and show off their projects and interact with other people who are doing the same things they are. So within the gardening groups, we were thinking, you know, at the beginning of this stay at home, how do we connect with people and how do we help people connect with one another while they're staying close to home so they can counteract that sense of being isolated? And we decided to do Victory Gardens. Now, you mentioned it came out of the Calaveras Master Gardener Facebook page. We've actually expanded the group, we should say, because we don't want your Tuolumne listeners tuning out. The group includes Tuolumne, Amador, and El Dorado. It's all of Central Sierra because our gardening is very similar depending on elevation. So it can be one group for Central Sierra. And in a group, anybody can communicate. It's as though you're in a room. You can choose to speak. The person next to you can choose to speak. The person over there can choose to speak. And by speak, I mean people can put up a picture of what they're working on. They can ask a question. They can share. It's going pretty well at this point. We have quite a few people who've been happy to share pictures and communicate what they're doing. So that's kind of a Facebook group. I'll go back on history, but do you have
some follow-up
questions on group?
Well, I think one of the analogies you made, I thought was probably perfect. You said it's like being in a room where you can share. So you can share information. In essence, it would be kind of like a virtual conversation.
Yes, it is like a virtual conversation. The only thing you get with a group that you don't get on the virtual conversation is some people may log into Facebook in the morning or the afternoon or the evening. So there'll be a pause. But the neat thing about that is it's on your time. It isn't like somebody phones when you're in the middle of baking and you have to stop what you're doing and answer the phone. When it's convenient for you, whatever time of day you like or whichever days you like, then you log in and you can see what people are doing and you can comment on it. And they might comment back the same day or the next day or 2 days later. So it's okay. Completely okay. Convenient. It isn't, I would say it isn't instantaneous, except there are enough people on Facebook that you usually get responses right away.
Right. But that is so interesting. And I mean, when you were showing the concept to some of the Tuolumne Master Gardeners, it was, people have the most amazing ideas regarding growing vegetables or growing whatever produce at home. That one of the things was the ability to grow things in containers that you don't need, because a huge amount of space to have a victory garden. Your victory garden could be in maybe a pot in front of your door. So it was just really, really fascinating, the variety and just the amount of ideas it generates.
Oh, it is wonderful, because if you think you want, the less you go out, the safer it is for everybody. And if you can have some lettuce mixes right in a little container on your porch, and you can just go grab a few leaves when you need them or grab a few herbs when you need them, that's fewer trips to the grocery store. What do you need to go to the grocery store every week for, as opposed to every 2 weeks? It's the fresh vegetables and fruit. Everything else keeps. So we also have people who have fruit trees and people who are thinking of getting fruit trees. As you know, I don't keep them here because I'm on a hill with bears and I don't want to attract the large wildlife. But fruit trees give a tremendous amount back to someone who has them for very little effort. You know, there's some pruning involved and some spray, but pretty much you don't have to do much for a fruit tree if you can plant it in the ground. Now, in pots, they require a lot more care, and it's something that I consider almost a little too much to do. Some people keep citrus in pots, but they require constant fertilizer. But yes, within the Facebook group, it's wonderful. We've seen people who've turned almost their whole property into beds, which is just this huge effort, and they'll be canning all fall. And other people who have a few containers with their lettuces, tomatoes, and peppers. We have, the group is across the spectrum. It's really nice to see the variety and how it can suit what people want to do, the time they have, the space they have. There's always something you can grow.
Right. Now, one of the things that came up in the course of discussion when you were making this presentation over in Tuolumne is the security or being safe on Facebook, just, you know, in general. What's kind of your thoughts about that?
My thoughts is, like anything in life, you need common sense. Facebook as an application or an app is probably safer than most of the things people regularly use. In Europe, their privacy rules are much more stringent than in the US. So any company that's international will adopt those European rules and have stronger privacy and protections than US companies. So if you have a cable company that has your email, it's probably a bit less safe than Facebook. And as you've seen from the papers, Facebook is under constant scrutiny. So they go the extra mile, they have the extra help, they pay the people to do their security, and the systems are safe. Where people run into issues with Facebook, and it's like we've chatted, is that you do need common sense. You know, if your own Facebook account, you can choose to make it private or public. And if it's private, the only people who can see it are people you approve, you connect to. But if you have a public account, because some people want to find more people and they make it public, you don't say, gosh, we're out of town for 2 weeks, nobody's at the house. Because then, you know, your house could possibly be broken into because you've announced to the world that nobody's there. But that's your choice.
Maggie, that is just something that I think people don't think about. They just, you know, they believe they're just, you know, addressing their friends. So why wouldn't you tell your friends you're on Facebook? But what you're saying, if you make it public, then anybody can look at it.
True. And you can look at your friends group and say, would I tell every single one of these people that there's nobody at my house? But also, as we showed in the group, and it can be a little hard without visuals, but with Facebook posts, you can choose to send that post just to your friends or just to your relatives. If you're out and you want to send a photo to a bunch of people and you don't feel like having to get into email and key all of those, you can choose on Facebook not to make an individual post public. So you can have a public account, but still have things that you keep private.
Okay.
That might sound confusing for people. So people who are beginners, I would say just if you're not going to announce to a room full of people something, don't put it up there.
Okay. That, you know what? That's a really good statement. You just have to know that if you say something, you're announcing it to a room full of people. I think that kind of makes it, I'm such a visual person that it makes it more visual for me. And it just, because when you say a room or if you talk about Facebook, I think the problem I have is trying to visualize what that looks like. But what you're describing, it just makes it a little bit easier for me to understand the concept. So I really appreciate that.
Well, fine. And when you think, I mean, this is getting a little bit into Facebook, but you can search all of Facebook. So if your account is public and you use the word vacation and somebody's searching vacation and they're filtering on locations, if it's public, it would come up.
Ah, okay. Hey, and
but
then,
you know, and the search is a wonderful thing because other, you know, you might be trying to search on crochet shawl patterns,
right?
So there were really, or you might be trying to find people you went to high school with or something. So you want the search field, but you have to keep in mind if it's public, and you put in a common word that somebody might search on that.
Right. No, that's very good. Hey, talking about searching, how would people find this group? What would be the best way for them to do it?
We are the Central Sierra Victory Gardens 2020. So if they use the words Central Space Sierra, it's not all one word. We're not on Instagram and this isn't tagging. It's separate words. But if they search on Central Sierra Victory Gardens, when they're on Facebook in that big search field that's right at the top, we should come right up. And then when we come up, they click join. And
it's
the
that
reason
easy,
they click
huh?
join, it's that easy. And they click join because that way, if somebody comes in and uses swear words or tries to make it political or religious, or something else, we can boot them out.
Ah.
So this is just, we just want it to stay upbeat. It's not about personal posts. It's not about opinions. This is a place for people to have a break and feel good and or commiserate if the Gophers get changed. There are chat groups and there are local chat groups if people want to get in and debate politics or religion or whatever. There is a space for that. And there are spaces for personal posts and people who have, people who need to Commiserate. There's all kinds of groups that are local.
Right.
You know, there are the fire and police groups where you can see what's happening, people listening to the scanners. There are all kinds of buy and sell groups in the area. There are.
So there's other platforms for that type of thing. And Maggie, this is wonderful. It's so exciting. Unfortunately, we ran out of time. I want to thank you so much for all this great information. And I look forward to talking with you in the future. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And I'm so fortunate today. I'm here at the Sonora office. And I actually have Nancy Morton, who's a Tuolumne Master Gardener, sitting with me. Nancy has been a Master Gardener since, when did you say,
2011?
Wow, that is incredible. We thank you for that, Nancy. Okay. And Nancy's been involved in the information booth. Now, you have an interesting question that Marion Chambers, who's one of our other Master Gardeners, a longtime Master Gardener and retired Deputy Ag Commissioner, had suggested that we ask you about, because you had done all the research on it and you actually grow roses yourself. Mm-hmm. And
yes,
it's a rose question.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
is.
What's the question?
Okay, the question that came on the hotline was, why are my roses all turning red? And it wasn't just the writer's roses. She or he had said that there were friends in the Bay Area that had the same problem. There were friends in Mariposa County, Calaveras County, and hers, and she couldn't find the common denominator. She didn't know why that was happening, and so asked the Tuolumne County Master Gardeners.
Wow, what a dilemma. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to, I mean, because roses can be expensive.
Yes, yes.
And you go to and buy a rose, mm-hmm. and you're expecting it to be a certain color.
Yes, and then have it revert or change color on you there. What is it? What causes this? What
right.
happens?
So do you, by any chance, have the answer to this mystery?
Well, I have to be honest and say that I am not completely sure why all these various different roses were turning color or changing back to red or changing to a red rose, but I do know that if roses have been grafted from the rootstock to the actual hybrid rose, and you prune below the graft, you will often get the rootstock rose. You won't get the hybridized color. And so that was one of the things that I plus a couple other people I asked said, well, that could be what happened. They pruned
right.
it in a certain way. And but then I kept looking because...
But can I ask you a question?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How do you know if... What does a graft look like?
You can usually see you can see the root, the base of the rose. You can usually see a nodule. You can mm-hmm. see some area where it looks like something's been cut and something's been added in.
Okay.
We have another rose expert, Sharon Grout. She's a Master Gardener. She would be able to tell you exactly what it looks like.
Okay.
I see, I have very few graft roses of my
right.
own, so most of mine grow from their rootstock, so it's
really?
Yes, so I'm not as familiar with
uh-huh.
what it looks like, but I do know that when you have a hybridized rose and you cut below that nodule,
right.
you will lose what was grafted on. So I wanted to know a little bit more, so I did a little more research, because this particular person said they had thought that it might be their pruning, but then other people did have, she said, one person in the Bay Area hadn't pruned at all, another person had just topped it a little bit, and two other people had done absolutely nothing to their rose forever. And
okay.
I even asked, are they young roses, are they old roses, and that was a variety of answers also.
Huh.
So I went to another book. I went to a book called 100 English Roses for the American Garden by Claire Martin, And I started looking up what happens to a rose when it might turn color. And I found out something quite interesting. I didn't know, but it was very interesting to me because I have an English rose that does this.
Oh.
And it's called a sport.
Okay.
In fact, roses do this all the time. And that's one of the second ways that people propagate roses is by the spore that occurs. And what a spore is, I'm going to read this.
Okay.
Spore mutations are the most common way new roses are produced after artificial hybridization. The most common occurrence of a spore is that the color of the rose is modified. And what the spore is, it says, the book said that if the original rose is pink and had a sudden unexpected flick of a genetic switch or a spontaneous mutation, it's called a spore. So sometimes they turn white.
Oh.
Sometimes they turn a different color, and you may see both white and pink roses on the same rose cane or different canes on your rose bush.
Oh my gosh.
And it happens quite often. In fact, I have a rose at home called the Winchester Cathedral, and it started out as a pink rose. It is sold as a white rose with a pink blush.
Okay.
And it on my rose bushes, mm-hmm. it has white and pink roses every year. And it's the white is the sport. And
okay.
the pink is the original. In fact, the pink is called Mary Rose.
Aww.
And once Mary Rose had her spontaneous change, her mutation,
mm-hmm.
David Austin saw this, said, I want this white rose.
Oh.
And then they do tissue. Well, I believe that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They do a tissue sample
culture,
and they propagate this new
okay.
rose.
Did they do it off of your rose?
They didn't do it off of my rose, but I bought the Winchester
okay.
Cathedral.
And then they did it off? Okay.
Through David Austin.
Okay.
And when it started turning pink, I kept thinking, why is it turning pink? I haven't pruned it. I haven't. It
right.
isn't a hybridized rose in the sense that it isn't graft
mm-hmm.
rose. So I was very interested to find out about sports. Those
How
are the roses.
Interesting. So it's... it's a rose that is mutating.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it is
spontaneously
mutating.
And it can be that the rose has 1,000 petals in its blossom, and then it reverts back to the original 5.
Oh my gosh.
Or it can be a color change. It can be a leaf change. There are a variety of things that can happen. But for the most part, it's color. The change
okay.
is the color.
And see, I never even thought about the other possible changes.
Mm-hmm.
I just was thinking about the color change, but the arrangement of the petals, that is so interesting. So you could come out with a brand new rose.
And that's, like I say, according to the book, it's the second most common way to have a new rose, to propagate a new rose, is a sport.
It's really exciting.
It is.
It's not a bad thing.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't a bad thing. I'm not sure that's what's happening to this person's,
okay.
this client's roses, but it is kind of exciting to find out that there's a whole different way that new roses come to be. And I like the fact that the picture I found on the internet, not the internet, in my rose book, is actually the Winchester Cathedral David Austin rose with its pink original
right.
rose, Mary
right.
Rose. I'm not sure all this information helped the client that much,
okay.
but I think it gave them an idea about what could be happening. It also sometimes it's just the environment. It's watering, it's too much heat. There are other reasons why it could be turning,
okay.
but without looking at the rose, without
sure.
studying it, I wasn't able
right.
to completely
right.
answer the question.
And probably what would have been better to help you and the rest of the team over at the information table is to bring in a series of pictures on all these individual roses and to show what it originally looked like and here's what it looks like now, and showing pictures of the leaves and the stems and I mean, because otherwise it's just too difficult.
It is. It's very difficult. And so for the information booth, whether it's ours or the one at the farmery, we usually ask, could you bring in pictures? That helps. I think even the farmers market information booth asks for pictures. But it in this case, it may have made a difference. Probably a home visit would have been the best, but unless somebody was going to finance the trip to the Bay Area, I think we're probably just going to have to go with what we found.
That's true.
Yes, true. Yes.
Now you answer, or as a team, the team answers a wide variety of questions at the information booth. There's been so many different questions about yellow jackets, and how is there another question that maybe pops up rather frequently?
Well, one of the questions that has come up quite a few times this year, and in fact last year, was about the oak trees. Oak trees turning, having a silver look to them, having a silver cast. And in fact, there were so many of them last year that we even asked our head honchos,
Scott Onetto,
and so he sent out an email about what was happening with the trees and saying that it's a powdery mildew with the hot weather, they will recover, there is nothing you can do about it. And I noticed this year more and more of the trees along the different roads are turning that silvery color.
Again this year.
So something is going on with that one. And so I thought that's one that we hear about a lot.
Sure.
I'm trying to think what other ones that
You had
are...
something about, it was a weed maybe in somebody's yard?
Oh, yes. We had, and I hope I remember it correctly, we had a few weeks ago an individual who brought in a sample. That's another thing that we really
like is to have
the samples come in. And not just small samples, but larger samples. And she brought us a sample of a weed that we were looking through all the books to see if we could identify it. We were looking on the computer, trying to, we even took it home. It was
one of those,
we couldn't solve it there.
Right.
And it ended up that it was a turkey mullein, which a lot of us were thinking, well, it looks like a mullein. It must be, it has to be. But what had happened is it had been mowed so often and cut back down to the ground that it had mutated into a prostrate that went across the ground rather than going up. And so when we finally identified it, it was, oh, that's why it had that interesting smell. And some people said, oh, that's the worst smell in the world. And the rest of them were going, I don't smell anything. And then somebody else said, well, that's not a bad smell. So it's, I guess it's whether you like the smell of the sages and the mullens, and
just,
a lot of us
just
did.
In case somebody doesn't know what a turkey mullen looks like, what does it normally look like?
I'm thinking, well, it's a silvery color.
Okay.
It has fuzzy,
fuzzy
leaves.
Right.
Sort of elongated, but round.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see it alongside
of the road
and dove love to eat it. There's usually a stem and then more than one leaf comes out from I'm not saying exactly correct, but if you look up turkey mullein, Google it, you'll see pictures, look up images, and you'll see it. But this time of the year, there's quite a bit of it alongside all the roads in Tuolumne County. And along with the various different sages, it does have a scent. And most of the people go, I think that's a turkey mullein.
Then talk about some great research work. Mm-hmm. And really, you've got a team of detectives trying to solve these puzzles and questions and mysteries.
Yes.
But we ran out of time,
okay,
Nancy. And I just want to thank you so much for being here. And I hope you can join us again.
All right.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much for asking me.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. Thank you.